This is grow plan. Grow plan here. Right, come on up.
Flat at the side.
So good afternoon and welcome. We've read the original submission that you lodged, so thanks very much for putting that in. And you don't need to read that out to us because we've already read it. But I see we've been given a document today. What is that different than the submission?
It's really an update. Got some additional wording.
Pardon?
It's got some additional wording, but nothing entirely new.
All right, well, you just want to proceed and highlight your key points to us then.
Okay. Just briefly explain what I am.
Yep.
I'm a landscape architect and ecologist, and I sort of developed over the last 6 years into an agricultural consultant because most of my training was in the stormwater sector, both urban and farm. I'll talk briefly about the sort of structure of the plan, really thinking about the readability of the plan and the maps that come with the plan. So I'll just probably read them out. That's probably the best way. Innovation, rapid change and reviews to the plan. How enabling of innovation is the new plan. I'm concerned that with so much impending and disruptive change, both climatic and technological, you know, we are getting a lot more weather events and so on. That a minimal standards approach locked into a 10 or 15 year plan cycle will stifle innovation and farming survivability. I believe the plan has far too much focus on minimums, thresholds and limits rather than targets and goals. Why not incentivise environmental performance by setting targets backed by e.g. rates relief, consent fees relief, positive farmer publicity, etc. We're supposed to be a competitive society. Let's tap into that and make real progress for stream health. Phosphate. It's time to start using phosphate detection methods to detect more phosphate. There are at least 16 test methods, and there's a footnote for that. Olsen is sort of ideal for measuring super, but it only really detects a fraction of total phosphate, soil phosphate. Phosphate's an extremely finite source. We talk about peak oil, but there's also a term in the industry of peak phosphate, which is about 2035. After that point, phosphate will become exceedingly difficult to get or to obtain. No one's looking at this and they go, oh, well, it's okay to lose, you know, X number of grams per hectare per year, but once it's gone, it's gone. Maps. And readability. Maps are, as supplied in the draft plan, very difficult to use. If there was a grid added to them, plus the addition of legal lot lines and some road names, it would be much easier for everyone to see where they are. I'm an independent researcher and I work in the stormwater sector, so I'm doing this off my own bat. It takes a lot of hours to read through hundreds of pages of stuff and condense it. If it was faster, more people would take part in this process. Also, your PDFs, you know, it's a wonderful technology. People can mark these things up. They can swap them around with their neighbours. They can comment on them and they can send them to councillors and the panel, for instance. You can speed up a lot of these processes with this kind of technology. And again, you'll bring more people into the cycle. It would be helpful if there was a page header telling you just a précis of what was on that page and whether you were looking at a policy, a rule, or an objective, or an appendix. Just at the top of the page, fairly simple thing to implement. And it would also help if the numbering was consistent across things. So your section 32 analysis, if a number 16, a reference for rule was all the way through, So rule, section 32, rule, policy, objective, etc. One number all the way through that make it easier for people to cite these things and track the reasoning chain coming through from council and also from submitters. Jargon and specialist language, substituting mean annual flow for Q95 doesn't seem to improve reader understanding. Everyone knows what mean annual flow is. Also, I found a few instances where there's a reference to an article and there's no reference supplied in the document. There's a superscript 9 somewhere that referred, and there's several others. Setbacks. I'll sort of talk about these and then come up again in the rules. Three width controls, better than nothing, but or just one. It's a very blunt instrument, and I don't think it'll have any real effect except removing valuable land from production. What is needed is a clearly stated option to choose between this approach and a site-specific solution, which is really, we're sort of looking at the granularity here of the physiographic approach. We're drilling right down to the paddock scale. For instance, variable width setbacks tailored to soil, climate, and crops. There are several ways that exist on the books for doing this. To my knowledge, none have been implemented in New Zealand, but they have been implemented in Nebraska, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Finland, and so on, in all sectors ranging from horticulture through to forestry and dairy. And there are a number of ways of doing these things which range from intuitive sort of methods that using farmer knowledge and a knowledgeable extension person from the council, right through to semi-automated digital mapping systems. Main advantage of these is you get a known mitigation effect. You can basically state what level of mitigation you want, and they generally use 30 to 50% less farmland than a fixed width approach. So many farms, if you impose a 20 metre setback or a 12 metre setback or whatever you do, a farm can lose many, many hectares of land. Overview of human waste and composting septic systems. There needs to be a sort of a move away from the traditional systems, at least to support composting systems. Chemicals not from agricultural sources. There was a list of agrochemicals in the document. There were a number of things not in that list. One was phthalates, which are the plastic softeners wrapping around baleage. Yeah, and you see this stuff scattering the countryside everywhere. The softeners in that mess up hormones within pretty much all life. And they do get into rivers, and there's quite a large body of knowledge around this. Likewise, fence posts. Tantalised fence posts have been recognised as a major problem in Marlborough, and a lot of farms are looking at dealing with that. They're wrapping posts or in a plastic sleeve and other things. Into objectives. There are too many objectives, and there's a lot of duplication, overlap, and indirect language. I believe a number of objectives could be folded into one another, e.g. 1 plus 2 and 3 to 5. Otherwise, it just requires far too much reading. And I think there are 18 objectives. It's an awful lot to keep in mind. I believe there's an over-reliance on using the RMA as the baseline, whereas it can only ever be a very, very broad brush approach. The RMA is sort of an average for the whole nation. But once we get down to a paddock scale, it's far too basic. Moving into specific objectives. Objective 7 around over allocation. I believe that should be stopped immediately once it's known. Farms are normally know what their use is at any one time. To talk about the phasing out of over allocation, if you're already over allocating and someone's drawing down groundwater table, that's going to eventually result in a change you just can't go back to. You'll kill a river. Sorry, I haven't. Well, objective 8, it seemed extremely vague to understand what that objective was seeking. There are also references in that objective to standards that are not included in the document. I know you can't include an entire standard in a document, but for certainly independent researchers and also for farmers, you can't just go and... These documents are very tightly bound. You often got to pay $200 to buy one. If you go to the library, they won't lend it to you. It's only you can look at it in the library. They keep them under a very tight lock and key. So if you could at least scan the relevant pages and put them in the back so people could see, that would save people an awful lot of running around. Objective 11 states that water is allocated and used efficiently. What about low flows? How is Farm Council looking at low flows and climate events response flows? I know central government has sort of an El Nino watch, but how is Council working with that? Also, I contacted Environment Southland in 2016 the development of a rational method to decide on allocations for irrigation, especially in highly allocated areas. I was never called back about that. There has to be some way of creating a meaningful metric, such as added market value or protein content, so you can actually, you basically value the water. Yeah. I've tried to word one of these. You want to allow things rather than force people into a corner. And I'd be very happy working with council to come up with something like that. Objective 12, talking about groundwater levels and minimum surface water flows. It's really a question. Is the monitoring network the council has dense enough to realistically model groundwater levels? A conceptual model is fine, but you need a certain number of points to get a reasonable representation of what is really going on. I don't know, and I'm not competent to say whether there are enough monitoring stations, but that's something that other people I think would find great value in knowing. Objective 7 talks about the natural character of wetlands, rivers and lakes. These attributes of freshwater bodies should not be all lumped together. Some of these habitats are also very rare, unique, where others may be more common, e.g. vernal pools, which are pools that dry out in summer, and also seasonally variable wetlands. Also, many small and narrow features are missed in state sector databases. So I just believe council needs to be aware of these small, rare features. Objective 18 is really about wording, really. Most people who study or have studied in the last 15 to 20 years at university have learned about best management practice. We didn't do good management practice. Best management practice is normally abbreviated as BMP, so if you put fresh water and nitrate and BMP into Google Scholar or a database, you'll find papers. If you put GMP or good management practice, you won't. Rule 25, sloping ground cultivation. I believe this is too prescriptive. There needs to be allowance for innovations in this area, including lightweight autonomous ground vehicles, basically farm bikes without a human on, and also drones. There's just huge, huge change in the sector. A lot of, we all know that a lot of farmers are using drones on their farms to manage stock, open gates, check crops. But there are moves to using, doing cultivation type operations using drones. Hard rules make innovation impossible. Wetlands Rule 74. Protected wetlands need to have a management buffer so they don't become dewatered, basically from drains in their vicinity. Rule 76, vegetation planning, comment and amend. Innovation is occurring in this area which will change how riparian schemes are designed, ranging from fencing design, including whether fences are used at all, for instance radio fences, so animals have a collar. You can vary the shape of your fence throughout the year. Drones and other rapidly emerging technologies, ranging on to vegetation cover and on to maintenance. Some level of production needs to be enabled for riparian networks, as this document, this plan, if applied, will mean losses of large areas of the farm from productive use. I mean, I realise that the document does allow sheep into that area, but a farm that is entirely dairy will have to procure sheep or the service of someone who's got sheep. Production forestry needs a definition here, as some harvest or vegetation removal from these systems will be necessary. So yeah, I would like to see a definition of production forestry. People should be allowed to work in these systems in some way, otherwise you'll get long-term fire hazards from these belts of weedy vegetation spreading up hills. Appendix F, support. This is well worded and at least without a deep reading appears direct. It would be ideal if this was the approach taken with all of Southland's water bodies. Appendix L2, stream depletion. There's too much reliance on models here rather than real or even just daily time monitoring of water levels. This regime could easily lead to a dry bed. Water bodies characterized as ephemeral. Oppose amend. Ephemeral streams in many catchments represent a greater stream length than flowing waters. By not targeting ephemeral streams, significant levels of target pollutants will be missed and flow on to pollute freshwater bodies and the ocean. By including ephemeral streams, it allows them to be considered by innovative farmers, with their results leading to benefit for all farmers and our streams. Stream depletion effects due to groundwater abstraction should not result in a more than minor effect on the frequency, extent, and duration of flow loss in intermittent bodies. Amend. There appears in this section to be no mention of baseline studies to determine natural stream height ranges. Who decides on what minor means? That really needs defining. How responsive will any controls be to climatic extremes? Will there be a way to control takes during climatic events? I know there is government legislation that allows for that. And then finally, once the river has been killed, they tend to be hard to bring back to life. And that's the end of my...
Yeah, thanks very much, Mr. Coburn. I note that the material you've gone through today is very, very similar to what was in your original submission.
Yes.
Apart from the items on the rules, where in the original submission you just had further comment and you've now provided that comment. In terms of many of the questions that you pose in the table document, if you sat down with the Environment Southland staff, I'm sure they could help you with some answers. I'm not sure if we'll have any questions for you because of the nature of the submission, but I'll just check with the panel.
Sure.
Lloyd?
No, I think you've made your point quite clear, so I'm happy to...
No questions.
Sorry. Thank you. No questions.
And Morris, any questions?
No, I didn't have any either because it was fairly high level.
And I thank you for running through that information again for us this afternoon, but I've no questions or clarification for you.
Sure.
But I would encourage you to sit down with some of the staff and to pass those questions you posed in here by them.
Mm.
Okay, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
We now adjourn and reconvene at 9 in the morning. Thank you.